Support for Commodity Week Online comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the March 8 edition of Commodity Week. The United States Department of Agriculture has updated the supply and demand figures for commodities. They changed the numbers, but not the outcomes. We'll try to figure out what it means today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois, and Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing from Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find all of our agricultural programming online at WILLAG.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's start our discussion, Sherman Newland, with this question. The United States Department of Agriculture on Friday morning released its monthly WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. The numbers for corn and soybeans, at least the ending stocks figures, of 632 million and 125 million remained the same. For beans, they actually didn't change any numbers except for, well, what the cash price might be. But for corn, they reconfigured how they got to the 632. Can you tell me a bit about that and what you thought about those numbers?
Yeah, they did. They left us carry out the same, but how they got there was a little bit different. They raised feed and residual 100 million bushel, but also cut exports by 75 million bushel, and also raised imports up 25 million bushel. So it was a net zero there. So it looks to me like the demand, feed demand for corn is still pretty strong. And so that was a good indication, and that kind of gave the corn a relief upside rally here today.
Pete, when you hear that number and you look at the feed demand, which increased, did it surprise you very much?
It surprised me they raised it that much, but on the other hand, a lot in industry think they ought to raise it another couple hundred million due to no hay and no grass.
Yeah, I think the feed side, they're still catching up. You know, we talked about that a month or so ago on the last report. I think that they've been a little bit off, really, for the last year plus. So I think they're still kind of catching up to what the actual feed number is, and the real wild card is going to be that stocks report in 3 weeks on the 28th.
And that's Chip Nellinger, of course, with Blue Reef. Let's take up some other issues at hand, and then we'll come back to the marketplace. Farmers have just a week now to make crop insurance decisions. I know you've looked at it, Sherm. What do you think are their best options at this point?
I think a lot of farmers are increasing their coverage. I know I did. I went to 85% for corn and beans, both enterprise units. I mean, the money you can guarantee yourself, I think, after last year's drought is pretty good. So I see farmers getting more insurance. The ones that didn't have any are signing up more. And then the ones that do have it are getting a higher percentage.
Yeah, I would agree. I think given the revenue that you can guarantee out there, based on what our costs are, take the highest level possible. Heard all kinds of horror stories last year about people that didn't take the harvest revenue option. I think that's got to be a must if you're going to take the crop insurance. So I think keep the levels high on beans. Remember, it's not just yield, it's price we're covering too. And if we raise big crops, South America puts a big bean crop out, price alone could trigger a revenue payment on crop insurance.
When you and I and Chip, Pete, were out on Wednesday night at this week at Lincoln, Illinois, Gary Schnitke was with us. He basically has said, look at RP first, and then put that aside. Take a look at GRIP HR, and then come to a decision, and it'll probably be back to RP.
I would buy at least what I have last year. If I can increase it, I would. The price volatility, if we go down a bunch from a big crop here, if we have a big crop, that will, even on big yields, $8 beans or $9 beans, could easily bump you in there. And I'm not saying we'll get there, but when the South American crop is finally pulled out of there, they still could be shipping beans when we're harvesting beans here to really hurt our bean crop this fall.
Let's take a look at the numbers in Chicago as they settled up on the week. The March contract in the corn pit had a high this week of $7.33.5. Remember, we give you the high for the week and the low for the week, which was $6.87.5, the change from Friday to Friday. Just a penny higher at $7.25.25 in the March corn. December corn futures at $5.47, down 9.75. So the spread changed, a dime for the week? A dime and 3/4, actually, for the week. It may be the beginning of a bigger change, I would assume, over time.
The bull spreads have been working. I mean, we've got into that $1.55 area on that May-December corn spread here lately, and we could see it continuing to widen out. I mean, from those numbers today with the old crop carryout continuing to look tight for corn, that could be friendly to that spread. But at the same time, you're looking at a larger acreage, possibly a new crop, along with more moisture coming here in the Midwest, and the potential for a pretty big yield and a lot lower prices on the new crop.
Chip, last year at this time when we were looking at the ending stocks for corn, we were carrying something along the lines around 800 million. This year it's around 632. Last year, by the time we got to the end of the season, we had increased that carryout by a million bushels. It's down just by 200 million bushels, I'm sorry. And it's down just a bit from that at this point for the last year's carryout. But I'm wondering, we're now roughly 200 million bushels below where we were last year. We added 200 million by the time we got to the end of the season last year, the marketing year, in August. Can we do the same thing this year, or is there just so little corn out there that we're going to be much tighter?
I think you touched on it earlier with the spread action. I think the corn spreads are telling you right now just how tight we are. We're looking at I think near historic inverse in the March-May corn spread. You look at May futures, they're 22, 23 cents over July. So I think it's a little bit different than a year ago in the fact that, those corn spreads right now, and it shouldn't be doing that this time. That's something that we would typically expect, on into spring and summer, not right now when the March contract going off the board. So I think the spreads are telling you it is an extremely tight situation in corn. Could we import more corn? Could we shut ethanol down? Things could change down the road, but I think spreads alone are tipping the hand that it's really tight.
And look at the basis. I've got, depending on where you're at and how hot they need it, the basis is extreme in places. Maybe the basis will do a lot of the work instead of the board, but I know a company we clear through was talking in February that it is so tight they could go well over a dollar on basis, and that was scary. They didn't want to have to, but it's hard to source corn now. What's going to be to source corn in June and July for the end user?
Does that mean that over the near term and in closer by months, as opposed to the time we get to June, July, August, that it's potentially possible to really do demand destruction, complete and total demand destruction of some sort, whether that's just shutting down, and I suspect it'll come back, but plants shut down and we drop off, we hit a wall and we just drop off suddenly?
It's possible. I mean, if prices rally enough, I mean, you could see ethanol plants literally shutting down. I mean, there was some talk about some wheat being bidded for some ethanol plants, but that's not going to be a big factor. You can't really substitute wheat into the ethanol plant that easily. So I could see that. You could get prices high enough to where you shut down more exports than what you're looking at. And then the trade gets looking at the bigger picture. If we have good weather and the bigger acres, and they think, okay, we've got it to this point, maybe we can get to when we can get new crop harvested. Kind of depends on how quick they get stuff planted in the south.
Old crop is fireworks. What about new crop? Not so much the case, I suppose.
It's not, and that's a good point. We're talking really about two entirely different commodities. And just because old crop, we're talking about friendly basis, friendly spreads, tight stocks, doesn't mean that has to do anything to support new crops. So, you know, really what I've looked at the last month or so, cotton has gained, 22-23% versus corn since the 1st of December. The corn-bean ratio has moved in way more in favor of beans. I think you can shoot the 99 million corn acres, you know, out the window. And so that's, you know, part of the issue there. And I think the market's getting way ahead of itself. You know, we don't have the planters rolling, and we sure don't have a record crop in the bin. And that's a long way out. So the market, as usual, is, in my opinion, getting a little ahead of itself in the case of corn anyway.
Yeah, and we're late planting in the south. They're usually planting by now. How much longer will that be? Last year we had a ton of corn harvested early that was used for this crop year that they are also might not be recognizing. So, I mean, old crop corn's got the moon up there. But if we look after planting like last year, if we do get it planted, what do we go to, 5-10? I mean, we dropped we were June 1st at 5-10, and then we rocketed up due to the weather. So the weather can still make it go higher, but supply-wise, we are very tight on old crop. New crop, hey, if we have a regular crop, we're going to have more than we need anywhere.
March wheat, $6.90, down 23 and a quarter on the week. The July at 6.98 and three quarters, 23 and a half cents lower. Is this a crop that needs to be sold if it hasn't been?
Some people have said wheat's should be the leader, and if they were implying to the leader to the downside, they would have been correct. It could still have some more downside potential with it. If you've taken out crop insurance on your wheat, that may be a little bit different story.
Go ahead. Probably have not. And crop insurance, it would be $8.44.
Exactly.
So that'd be a lot of different story.
That's why I took it out. Yeah.
There you go.
Why not? But if we could get a pop, I mean, into the wheat market here a little bit, and things look, you know, like they're going to be pretty good out west on the wheat crop, and maybe they're not going to have quite the disaster that they were looking at. I would look at getting some new crop wheat sold a little bit, yeah.
March soybeans for the week, 15-16 and a half on its top, the bottom at 14.60, settlement price up 44 cents at $15.08.5. November beans at 12.68.5, up 7.25. The exports just keep coming for beans. They just keep coming for beans. When will they stop?
That's the question, and it's the harvest delays in Brazil. Obviously, China has almost an unending appetite for beans, but don't forget beans. Both old crop and new crop have me scared a little bit. You know, if they ever get straightened out in Brazil and start getting beans put out on the market, you know, don't think for a minute China won't come in and cancel a bunch of beans in a hurry and buy them cheaper down there.
The only reason we continue to sell them right now is because they can't get them quick enough out of South America. If they were shipping those in a normal manner instead of just all clogged up, our beans wouldn't have made this last dollar up that they made in the last month.
You're in agreement?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think they'll get their mess straightened out in South America. And when they do, I mean, our exports will probably drop. But, I mean, but at the same time, whenever they do stop exporting beans here from us, I mean, we're at 95% sold for the year. I mean, we've got six more months to spread out 61 million bushels, basically, of beans throughout that time as far as to meet the USDA exports.
You think USDA should have changed their export figure?
I think they should have raised it a little bit, and I think they should have raised usage everywhere. I mean, bean meal right now, to crush bean meal is they're making money, so they're going to keep crushing.
You agree?
Well, I think if you look at the comments, they said, kind of we talked about the demand destruction before. You know, I think they're a little bit forward thinking, saying these high prices are going to ration the demand. So maybe in the back of their mind, they are thinking exports are going to slow down or we're going to see some cancellations from China. I'm not sure. But, yeah, I mean, the demand pace has been really strong. I think they're taking more of a reserved approach, though, and seeing what happens once South America gets fully online.
Well, I think that's part of the reason why they didn't change some of the numbers. They're probably forward-looking, looking to see if China is going to cancel some of these recent sales is what I would think.
Anything that we ought to be taking up on the livestock side? Maybe, Sherman, do you have experience there where maybe producers should be locking in some potential needs?
Feed needs, possibly. I mean, if you could see – I mean, if price of corn to drop down some more, new crop corn in that $5 area, you know, $5.25, you may take a look at doing something like that. I could see some getting feed needs in for part of next year.
Sherm Newland is with Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. Also in studio with us, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Chip Nellinger out of Blue Reef Agri Marketing in Morton, Illinois. When we come back, we'll talk with Jerry Gulkey of Gulkey Group. He's from Chicago.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Some rain fell in Argentina last Friday and Saturday, and after mostly dry weather this week, another round of showers and thunderstorms is expected this weekend. That'll be followed by mostly dry and cool weather for the coming week, except in northern areas. The drier weather next week will aid corn harvesting. Most crops in Argentina are now past the moisture-sensitive stage of development. Enough rainfall has come in recent weeks to end declines in crop quality, but yields have been reduced in Argentina this year due to weather issues. Showers and thunderstorms are plentiful in South Brazil and Paraguay again this week, so soybean harvesting has been a bit sluggish. The rain has been beneficial to recently planted second-season corn. Numerous showers and thunderstorms will continue this weekend into the first half of next week, and additional rain is likely at times from late next week into the following week. Thus, harvesting will remain slow in South Brazil and Paraguay, but immature second-season corn will benefit from the moisture. A few scattered thunderstorms have dotted center-west and southeast Brazil and Bahia during the past week, but most of this area has received below to much below average rainfall since mid-February. That has allowed for rapid soybean harvesting and second-season corn planting, but rain is now needed for newly planted corn. Mostly dry weather is likely to continue for the next several days, but it appears that showers and thunderstorms will become more numerous starting during the middle to end of next week. And some long-range models indicate that will be the start of a wetter weather pattern, which would benefit second-season crops. That is your South American weather update for Commodity Week. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 8th day of March. You can find us online at willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Our panelists in studio today include Sherm Newland of Risk Management Commodities, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. On the phone line, Jerry Gulkey. He's with the Gulkey Group out of Chicago, Illinois, a farmer and a broker and well-known analyst. Jerry, thank you so much for taking the time with us. You know, I'd like you to ask to take up just the difference between the eastern and the western corn belt at this point, and what, if anything, it means to you about new crop corn.
Well, I think the first thing we have to kind of remember, and not many people are talking about it, but you know, a couple of years ago we said we better get a big crop or we're going to have to reduce demand because through price rationing, and we didn't get the big crop last year, so we have reduced demand down to about, what the way I look at it, is probably down to 11.2 billion bushels of corn use this year. And then you look at it, you know, we're going into this year now with demand already reduced. So you don't need 160 bushel corn. We don't need a record crop. We probably can get by with 150. In fact, I think the government in their outlook meeting said 150 bushels still says 1.8 billion. So I looked at a spreadsheet that I've got at 99 million acres, and I agree with the gentleman a little while ago. I think maybe that's got to come down a million and a half, maybe 2 million, I don't know. But for each million acres, it's only about 150 million bushels. So even at 97 million, we could produce 14 billion bushels versus 11.2 last year usage. You've got, and even the government in USDA in their outlook said we think we could increase in performance about a billion and a half bushels, and still we're going to have a carryover. So I think what the market's looking at is not, I don't agree that it's getting ahead of itself. It's saying, Jerry, if you and your friends have at least a halfway decent yield, you're going to have too much. It's going to take time to get that demand back through exports and probably will fall even further. So I look at it and say, you know, we can probably get along without a crop, big crop in Iowa, and right now that's probably the only area. I was in Ohio recently. They've got plenty of water. The tiles are running in southern Illinois, and I think, you know, we don't need to replenish the groundwater subsoil. We can get by with a good crop, but a good average rainfall at the right time, and as we know, the timing, and I think what we want to avoid is the heat. That hurt us last year. So we're at a point, I think, where if we do plant those acres at 97 to 99, we'd better not get an average crop or trend line yield, if you understand what I mean. And that's, and the market's kind of letting new crop corn go down, and in fact, new crop soybeans of 213 and 214 or even lower, suggesting that, you know, if we grow an average crop and what's coming out of South America, it's not so much this year coming ahead of us that could hurt farmers, it's what's coming after that. And what do you do if you carry in a billion, 2.2, and if you carry in 300 million bushels of beans in the next year? You've already incentivized the rest of the world to plant. I don't have any CRP acres in North Dakota on our farm. Probably won't have them. And so you got a problem brewing here that you'd like to see a Goldilocks type of thing. You know, just enough corn so we don't destroy the ethanol in the livestock industry, and we can keep the market on edge saying, well, now you got to do a pretty good crop again in 2014. So I'm looking ahead a little bit further than the average bear. I don't see any reason to hold to have held $17 beans and $7 corn this fall, and I don't have any left, and so I can talk my position, but that's how I view things. So we can get a not so good a crop in Iowa. If Illinois, Indiana, and the I-States get it, then the guys that are really going to suffer are the guys in North Dakota, 3 million acres of corn that at 360 million bushels total, or South Carolina. We could get to the point where we don't care what they produce if we got enough, and then they suffer a low yield and maybe even a low price. When we get a good yield in the Midwest, they've got economic problems they hadn't envisioned 3 years ago.
Hey, Jerry, this is Sherman Newland. Mm-hmm. We've been a big proponent of buying put options right now and leaving the cash market unsold on new crop. What's your best advice then for farmers that really haven't made any sales yet?
Well, I thought when I started this business 25 years ago that I dragged farmers into the 20th century kicking and screaming, you know, but I think we definitely need to use futures more than we have. A lot of guys have backed away. A couple of years ago, in the last 2 years, doing nothing was the best thing to do. So now we've got a lot of guys, I think, like deer in the headlights and not knowing what to do now. I've talked to a lot of elevators. They're saying they're significantly undersold, or farmers haven't done much for 2013. I don't know. I looked at put options. You already got one in the crop insurance, so you're there already. But they're so doggone expensive. And a gentleman from a major producing commercial firm once told me 25 years ago, he said, Jerry, options were made to sell, not to buy. And so when I look at buying a put, and I haven't looked recently, but I know soybeans, they were $1, maybe beans, 30 or 40 cents, you're giving up a lot of downside risk before you even get into the money in them. And of course, now that February is over, we've got that crop insurance in front of us that you could probably double dip if we're going to go to $4, which I think is a possibility. And if we get an average or something less than 155 bushels an acre, probably get us to $4, $4.50 on board of trade. So I like using futures and options because we did it last year. I mean, futures. And we sold 15% of our cash. And then when June turned around, I didn't know what was going on, but we had a lot of comments from down south that you guys don't know what's coming. And then technically, I use some of the same technical signals that get me short to get me long again. And I get to the point where I can say, I don't care how high the prices were going to go, but I know where they're probably not going to go. And they're not going to go below $5 last June. And so we were able to get out of the way. And we'll do the same thing this year. We got about 10% of our crop sold. The rest is in futures. The problem I have, and maybe many of you have in advisory, is to get a farmer to want to embrace that. So if he's not going to do that, then you got to buy an option like you suggested. But I think we have a big job ahead of us to educate farmers on the risk that's going forward in this whole thing. Now that we got the Ukraine, Argentina, Brazil, and a lot of other folks becoming our competitors in corn and soybeans.
We like to, besides buying that put, possibly either sell lower puts or sell higher calls that we think are way out of the money where we won't think we'll get to as a help to pay for that dollar if a put costs a dollar. And then if you see the weather change, so it's going to either go the wrong way or from whatever your position, do you pull those one or the other off and just stay with their basics?
Yeah, and I think what you've alluded to there is if you're going to do this, you need some flexibility. You can get by with cheapening them up. I've done that. I have to really be concentrate on sometimes taking a look at where I'm at and saying, well, where am I really at now? And then of course, when something changes, know that you have that flexibility and draw some criteria, I think, ahead of time. I tell my guys at the office, I say when we have a position or an outlook, we got to continue looking over our shoulder. Is that what is it that's coming that I don't know yet, or that may come that will totally change my viewpoint that I had, maybe my fundamental viewpoint that I had at the time that I did something, and what is it that's going to make me look wrong? I just don't want to be wrong big. And getting a farmer to have that flexibility, he really needs someone to guide him to do that and say, all right, remember we did this. Here's what's changed. You know what was what. I look back and say to people who didn't want to sell 650 corn, what do you know then that you, what do you know now that you didn't know then? And why is corn 550 and not 650? And what changed and what's coming up here now that make you believe we ought to be at $5 by the time, at the end of March or at the 1st of May when the biggest risk in our whole system of planting and so forth is ahead of us. You know, the way this thing is going, we might be surprised by the March 30th, 28th, I guess it is, stocks report and acres, to where we were in 1996. We had a similar situation where we kept getting stocks reports and we said, there's nobody going to use $4 corn and then $4.25, then $4.50. And we found that the end user just got along because he knew cheaper prices were coming and they just aren't going to get out of the business of feeding cattle and hogs, one month and then say, I'll get right back in again next fall. These guys are going to supposedly should be using some retained equity to keep themselves afloat. You don't make money every year farming. You don't make money every year in feeding livestock. So you may have some retained earnings to keep you in the business when the good times do roll.
Jerry, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
You bet. Thank you for having me.
Jerry Gahlke is with the Gahlke Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Now a final word from our panelist in studio, Chip Nellinger.
Well, final word, we talked about crop insurance earlier. We know what our guarantees are now. Put the pencil to it, figure out what all your costs are, and that's one step of the revenue puzzle, and that will really help you in, I guess, keeping the emotions or keeping some of the emotions out of future marketing decisions.
That's on crop insurance. Pete Manhart?
What you don't have recovered on crop insurance, you ought to look at covering somehow with either cash and or options on paper.
And Sherm Newland.
Yeah, next Friday is the deadline on crop insurance. Make sure you get everything signed and set up and ready to go.
And one final note, Gary Schnitke would say, make sure you take the trend adjustment on your crop insurance for the APH. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.